Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Back and better than ever. It's the Flow Track Podcast. I'm Kevin Sully, joined by Gordon Mack. You can follow along live watching on YouTube. Gordon checks the comments, so make sure you write frequently in with what you think about what he's saying. His headphones, his sweatshirt, all that good stuff. We have an email address, flowtrackpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks to everybody who stuck with us the last week. Gordon posted some interviews on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday last week. Was that right? What did the schedule end up being, Gordon?
I think I did a Wednesday, Friday, some interviews. I'm not going to lie. I was struggling. There wasn't a lot of track news going on, and you weren't here. So I feel like the podcast quality took a little dip, but now we're back up. We're going to come back up after this past weekend. You're back. Track is back. We're all good. Olympics are coming up. So I'm just happy you're back from your paternity leave. So thank you for coming back. I realize this is not a solo podcast. This is a two-person podcast.
You know, as I was driving back from my trip, and I had one earbud in, and I was listening to you and the great Lincoln Shrike break down Monaco, I thought, they don't need me. I could just drive forever. There's no why am I even coming back? You got Lincoln's just obscure takes. You have you guys arguing about inconsequential things again. I said, this is a great podcast, even without me. But I decided to, you know, I stayed on the road and I got back just to help out. I woke up this morning. I opened up the Google Doc that you had filled in, which is cool. I think that's a cool thing that happened in the 2 weeks I've been away. You're contributing to the Google Doc, so I'm pumped up about that. And I see Josette Norris sub 4. And I see Colby Alexander 333. Yeah, what happened last night? You stay up late. What happened? I watched him this morning, but did you watch these live?
I didn't watch them all live because it got pretty late here on Central Time. But as soon as I was watching a TV show and it came to a conclusion, I rewatched the replay. And we got the flash in the bag. You know, that's what it is with these 1500s. You never know when you're going to get a good one, right? You know you're going to get multiple attempts at a good field and good pacing, but you never know when it's actually going to formulate into a fast time, whether it's either going to be just another 336 or, in this case, a 333 and a 359. So Colby Alexander, he's been a notorious 336 guy, 335, 336 guy. Comes out, it's not out of nowhere because he's always been in the mix, and runs 333, which – for perspective, he runs 333.65. Craig Engels, his PB is 333.64. He's only 0.01 behind Craig Engels, who I think most people would consider one of the top talents in the U.S. He got fourth at the trials. Colby Alexander, man, that is a legit time. It's second fastest time in the U.S. right now. And it just shows that the 1500 is a weird animal where – the people who have the 6th, 7th, and 8th fastest times in Nagoose, Centro, and Hocker are actually the ones who finished 1, 2, 3 at the trials. It's kind of wild how it works.
I watched this race. First of all, Craig Nowak is a great pacer. He's getting into the pantheon of all-time Pacers up there with the Bram Soms, the Matt Shears, if you want to go farther back in history. This guy sets up great. Chanel Price on the women's side. This guy sets up pretty good races here. And it was funny watching the commentary, Kevin Selby and Tim O'Rourke, and they're like, wait, this is going to be fast. This is going to be really fast. They're going to, oh my gosh, what's Colby Alexander going to run? Because he was out there all alone. He ran similarly to how we've seen Oliver Hoare run this year domestically and really put himself out there in that middle part. Nowak gets him through a couple laps, but this was a gutsy run from Alexander. He must have known that he had this type of effort in him, or he just threw all caution to the wind and really went for it. And you had, you know, Luis Grijalva not too far behind him, running a huge time there with a 3:35. So yeah, Alexander obviously, I mean, he ran pretty well at the trials. I guess, I mean, he makes the finals and he, what does he get, eighth? Yeah, he gets eighth, runs 3:38 in that really competitive race. You know, he wasn't in that top group, but there was a whole bunch of guys there, basically 3:37 to 3:38 high. He could have easily been top five probably in that race on a different day. It would have been a stretch to get him into the top three. But he's a guy who's been around, and now he's got a crazy PB. Women's side of things, though, Jeanette Norris, we thought she could make the team. And now you see why we thought she could make the team. 3:59 in this race. Really competitive run with Jessica Hull, which was really fun to watch as well, too. Now, remember going in, I mean, Norris had already PB'd a bunch this year, right? She had dropped her PB to 4:06. And then now PB's at 3:59. And if you look at the all-time U.S. list for women, like sub four puts you in a very, very small group. You got obviously Houlihan up there with the American record, Roberry, Decker, Simpson, Faber-Hamilton, Per St. Pierre, Willard, Kristen Worth Thomas, and then now Norris. So she's number nine. Remember, Schweizer just missed that last year by 2/100ths, but it made me think about Norris at the trials, and she was in the 5 and not the 15. Made sense at the time. 15 looked a little more crowded, but with hindsight being 2020, do you think she could have had a better chance at the 1500? I know it's a different race, different setup.
Yeah, well, it's always Monday morning quarterback. What are we doing? But like, I'm sure, you know, it's butterfly. We always can say, well, what if? Because then mm-hmm. what? Then also, what if you kill Hitler and then all the other permutations happen? You know, the whole what if situation. But the main thing is, I think Jeanette Norris is finding a way to take her first, like, she had like consistent after consistent improvement throughout all the regular season, and her first like bad race was the Olympic trials. And I think maybe she needed that. She needed to have to realize not everything's going to go perfect, but the fact that she can rebound and run a 3:59, which is not just a good time, it's an all-time great time. I think this sets her up really well for 2022, where I think she may be more willing to potentially go all in on a 1500. And she, I, you know, her and Heather McLean, you look at kind of equal right now. I mean, Heather McLean's not running sub four. I could see her getting top three. Corey McGee and Heather McLean are not invincible. I mean, the only person in that field that was really invincible was Elle Purrier. And she has a standard now, right? I was talking about this. The world standards for 2022 started after the conclusion of the Olympic trials. So now, okay. 3:59, she has the world standard. Colby Alexander, he has the 1,500-meter standard. They're both ready to go for Eugene in 2022. And it just shows that, like, just because you don't get your dream of making your first Olympic team, it doesn't mean it's the end of your career, end of your season. There's still opportunities out there, like massive PBs, and getting ready for 2022. It's already on to next year for these people. And you have to like where Jeanette Norris and Colby Alexander are at, because they're going to go into next year without the stress of chasing times. They're going to go into next year with the confidence of like, I'm in the same category as the Centros and the Schweizers and the Schneiders of this world. I just have to put together on the right day. And now they're going to be able to focus on, all right, how do I make it so I am the 333 guy or I am the 359 woman on the U.S. championship, during the U.S. championship finals? Mm-hmm.
They all basically took notes from Kate Grace. And they saw her just get seven PRs in a row or whatever she did in Europe. And they thought, well, just because I didn't make the team doesn't mean my season's over. And I'm just going to go here and smash my PB. Because I'm thinking about it, right? And the trials are such an emotional and physical drain on every athlete. And you can tell that's the case by looking at the performances after the Olympic trials. If you go event by event, there's nobody really, except for I think one person who we're going to talk about in a second, there's nobody really who's improved their stock, if you were tracking these things, from when they performed at the trials to now, right? Maybe they ran in Monaco or Gateshead, or they ran something in the U.S., and they've either basically hit the same level they were at or regressed a little bit or took a loss, and it made you think, oh, man, okay, well, that's probably just because of the trials and they'll be back. The only person I can think of who's legitimately improved their stock, I'm talking on the running side of things here, is Ajay Wilson after that 157. I know it's a weird race because she was running with the men, but we saw her barely squeak by in the women's 800 in Eugene, and she runs this 157 at the Penn Relays. I think she's improved her situation, but most other people, Gordon, either haven't raced or have raced around the same level, or it's like Bromel, they lost in a weird race, but then came back and won, but they already were the favorite to begin with, so it didn't really change your opinion of them.
What do you think about Ajay Wilson running an 800 with a bunch of boys? It's kind of unique. Like,
men.
It's fun to say. It's fun to call them boys. And then there's probably some high school kids in there, so they're boys. But, like, you see her on the screen right now. She's, like, in the back of that front pack. Like, if you're in this race with an Olympian Ajay Wilson, what's your – like, what do you think that white kid right there is thinking right now on the shoulder watching Ajay kind of pass him on the first 300?
Well, he tries to pass her back here too, which probably, you know, little going a little too soon there. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be a thrill, right? You're in this race. It's a good race, but there's one star in this race, and it's the person who's in the middle of the pack. So I see the time, right? I see 157, and then I see that it was in a race with boys, and I'm thinking, or men. See, now you got me saying boys. This is weird.
it's fun to say in a race with men,
and I'm wondering, okay, did that help her? Or did that hurt her? Did it give her a chance to chase and really get after it? Or did people get in her way? And after I watched the race, I guess you can make an argument in both directions there. You saw with about 4 meters to go, there was obviously some traffic she's navigating around. But at this point right here, she has people to chase, those of you who are watching right now on the live stream. Whereas if she's running a 157, there's only a handful of women in the world right now who would be there to let her chase. But I just liked the way she looked. I liked how aggressive she was in this race, coming off of, again, getting that third spot in that final 100 in Eugene. Yeah, this wasn't a PB for her, but a 157, I don't think we can count out 157s right now. We saw, you know, how fast that Diamond League 800 went last week, but that was Laura Muir, and Laura Muir's not even running the 800. So I think Wilson, I'd say her stock ticked up a little bit here, and I'm glad she was able to jump in this race. It's weird. So she's been in races with ridiculously fast people before. She's been in races with Caster Semenya. She's been in races with Francine Nienaber, but she's never been in a race where the winning time was that quick. Yeah. So it had to have been a 150, right? Even though it wasn't anything to sneeze at from a men's time perspective, it had to be a different type of experience for her.
Yeah. And I think she probably did it. I don't think she did it for the dynamic of being in a pack. I think it was purely probably a scheduling situation. And she knew that she wanted to be in a field where people would go out and at least sub 60. And she wasn't sure she would get that in a women's heat. And then, cause she came back and then runs like a 4:43 mile and wins it in the women's mile. So she was clearly turning this into like a workout type session. Philadelphia is her home training base. So this was kind of convenient for her for the Penn Relays to put off this, put on this unique all comers meet in the middle of the summer. It's kind of weird seeing Penn track events in July. Yeah, yeah. It's like, what are we doing here? But Penn Relays should be back live on Flow in 2022.
I just think, darn it.
I hope it happens. I hope we have track. US will keep going track. So that's good.
Yeah, I just think 157 for her, it didn't matter if it was solo. It didn't matter if she was in a big pack, if there were the wave light technology was out there. She just got a good time in regardless. And yeah, people can argue about what it would have converted to in a regular women's only field all they want. I just think it's a good sign moving to Tokyo. And it shows that her trajectory is going in the right direction. We got a question here, and it dovetails into something I know you wanted to talk about because you made a poll about this.
Well, before we get into that, I want to talk about the other U.S. Olympian in the 800 who also had a pretty good performance. Raven Rogers ran a 428 mile or 429 mile. What was it that she ran?
429 is what you have written down.
429 mile, which is a massive PB for her. And if you would come out of her training of like back in the Oregon days and her first few years out of college, you would never see her be running a sub 430 mile. I've seen some of the races that she's when she goes a longer distance, and it's not like this quick. So clearly something has now clicked for her in these longer distances for her to be able to put together a 429 mile. It's number 7 in the U.S. right now. I mean, Ajay Wilson, albeit coming off of 157, ran 443. 429 is clearly much faster than that. Well, it's number 7 in the world right now. I guess not even in the U.S. Miles not run that often, though. But do you think this is also, like you talked about Ajay Wilson's 157, that shows how her stock is going up. Do you think this 429 for Raven keeps her stocks still or moves it up at all?
I'd say it's a hold. I mean, she ran 157. She ran 157 at the trials and got a PB. So you'd have to do something really good between now and Tokyo to improve your stock. And going off distance it's tough to do because at this point you want to have A to A comparisons. You want to look at, hey, they ran this then and now they're faster. Hey, they lost to this person before and then they beat this person. The classic example of just an event that's really confusing right now is a men's quarter, because you have Norman win the trials, but Randolph Ross is still the only sub 44 guy. Norman goes overseas and loses to Gardner and Bryce Dedman, who didn't even make the U.S. Open 400 meter team. So now you're just wondering, well, what are we to do with the men's 400, right? Like you have just the results that are completely all over the place. But I think for Rogers, it's a good result. You know, proves she's healthy again. And she said it's her last race before Tokyo. There's not a lot of races before Tokyo. So as I mentioned before, you put up this poll, Gordon, and someone asked in the chat here, Rose Runner asked, is it concerning that our 1500 meter team are not running any tune-up races before Tokyo? And he's referring to the U.S. here when he says our team. We got to be specific here because, as you know, we are worldwide. Why don't you tell me why you thought to put this poll up?
Well, because we're coming up on the Olympics and there's no more Diamond Leagues. We're running out of race opportunities. And I was noticing there are certain Olympians, U.S. Olympians, who are choosing to not race, some that are choosing to race often, and some that are choosing to race only once. And I wanted to know what people think is the actual best strategy. And I honestly don't know, because you look at the women's 800, right? You got Ajay and Raven. They're all doing one race. I guess technically Ajay did two. But then a thing Mo did zero, is doing zero, because I don't think she's running any race between now and the Olympics. You look at the men's 1500, all three men, none of them, like your guy asking the question, none of them have run a race. Is that good? Is that bad? Are they going to be rusty? We don't know. What is the right number of races you should do when you have a month to chill before the Olympic Games?
So are you asking from a competitive standpoint, or are you asking from a professional track standpoint?
What's the difference?
Money. Because I'm going to Monaco. Uh-oh. If they're offering me a bunch of money to go to Monaco, I am 1,000% running in Monaco. But maybe you'd have a different answer if your goal is just, I want to be ready for Tokyo and I don't want to get on a plane and fly halfway across the world. And then
yeah, because the question is, Monaco giving you $4,000, is that worth the round trip, 7-hour flights, and then having to go to Tokyo? You know, it's like a lot. It's a lot of airtime.
Well, it's like the Rye Benjamin question, which we really wanted to see him race Warholm, and then he says, well, he's got to prep for the Olympics. But in a perfect world, you'd see them race there, and then at the Olympics again. I get it from a thing Mo's perspective. She's raced a bunch. Jared Neguse, Cole Hawker, collegians, they've raced a bunch. Even Centro hasn't raced a bunch, but he knows now how to get ready for these big meets. He's proven that. So you wouldn't be too worried about him. I think it's event by event here because we've seen Bromell race a couple times. The 100 team in general has run a bunch of times. From an interest perspective, I want to see them run again, but they got to do all this travel. There's all these protocols they got to go through that it makes it a bit more complicated. So you're saying basically is because we're looking at what, about a month, 5 weeks here? Is that too long to go without racing at this point in the season? That's a tough question. And I think it's individual. And the problem is now, especially because, you know, track isn't until the second week. So then you got to go another week before you have an – it's not like they're going to host – London's not going to have a big Diamond League meet like the first Saturday of the Olympics to get people tuned up. And these men and women are so good that they need big meets or big-ish meets or legitimate competition to put out the type of performances that we expect to see. And you're just not going to be able to do that given all the constraints right now and with the Olympics bearing down on us.
Yeah, and I mean, because I just – and it's happening not just in certain disciplines. Like you have Gabby Thomas who like scratches out of the 200s. And I'm like, all right, should I have more? We did a whole debate on Gabby versus the Jamaicans with Lincoln. Like, is that smart move for her to kind of sit on her back to back to back 21 second 200s and just ride that wave into the Olympics? Or is it better to suffer some losses? Like Shelly Ann Fraser Price is still out there running. She's losing, but you know, it's okay to lose when you know that it's the only win you have to have is at the Olympic Games. I mean, Clayne Murphy has tweeted many times, the only races that matter are the trials and the Olympics. And he's been okay with taking a bunch of seventh place finishes in the Diamond League because he knows, hey, it's okay to get seventh now, whatever. I just need to be running. I need to be in 143 peak after two prelims. You know, that's what he needs to do in order to medal.
Or look at Bryce Hoppel. Like, what did Bryce Hoppel get a bunch out of those European races? The person who won, the big 800 meters star from the U.S. overseas was Isaiah Harris, who's not even on the team. The big mid-distance star for the U.S. in Europe was Kate Grace, who's not on the team. I think there's something to that. There's something to, hey, our season is – our big goal this season is out the window. Let's just go and let it fly out here because I don't – Here's my thing. If we have this season set up, right, and it's built around Diamond Leagues, Continental Tours, that's that top tier, correct?
Correct.
If they run all those, if athletes are running those events, I can't really get upset about them not doing the lower tier events because you're running the meets that are at your level that are on the schedule. If you want to supplement them and run more, that's great. But, you know, there's a reason why, as I mentioned before, we're done with the Diamond League until after the Olympics. It cut off. It's over, right? Because they know people aren't going to show up for whatever reason. But asking them to add on more stuff, I think, is just difficult logistically at this time of year. I don't know how you feel about that.
What was the YouTube question?
Are you concerned about the fact that the 1500 team in the U.S. hasn't run? Since
I am not concerned. I do not lose sleep. The sleep is still good.
If you were, but if you had interest in it, like you say you're their you were their coach or you're their manager or whatever, just you had some sort of higher interest other than you just want to see a good Olympics. Like, would you be concerned with the fact that they haven't raced? I'm not, on the men's side especially, because I mentioned you got two collegians and then you got Centro, who even in a regular year is not racing a ton.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, I'm not concerned because, like, you just have to trust that they're not, like, forgetting that there's track races. They're not, like, missing the bus to the track meet or, like, late with registering their entry time. Like, they're choosing consciously that I am not going to run a race between now and the Olympics. So,
yeah,
as long as they are okay with doing it and they're not being forced to not run. You know, the only thing you should be concerned about is if it's because of an injury, but there's no way we can know that or project it on anything. I mean, yeah, look at this. Centro, he didn't have a single race between – I mean, did he run an 800? Let's see if he ran an 800 in July. Scroll up. Okay, so he did a couple – 1K. He did a 1K. So.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, no 1500s.
That's still a long break, though. In 2016 – He went from is it July 10th all the way to the end of August, and he had the one in July 23rd. I thought we might see some more U.S. people at the because they had the Sunset Tour races, but I think what happened was the Diamond League ones jumped ahead of them almost, and because it's Monaco, you're going to get quality fields. So then a lot of some of the mid distance people just went over there, and then that lessened the amount of Olympians who were in these domestic fields. But I don't know, man, it's hard. Like this year in particular, it's more difficult, but just think about all the questions we had going into the trials about people not racing a ton heading into the trials. At least now we know that they showed fitness at the end of June.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Do you know what's starting to get me concerned? Is I'm not concerned like, oh my goodness, their health, but concerned with the way Tokyo is like handling positive COVID cases, and that like Bradley Beal, the NBA star, is out, you know, and they're putting a fucking, excuse me, I don't mean to curse,
JaVale McGee, what's going on?
JaVale McGee, why is he on Team USA?
Hold on.
Keldon Johnson? Come on.
Hold on. Put some respect on Keldon Johnson's name, San Antonio Spurs. He almost led the team in scoring last night. Big win over Spain. I'm not going to hear all that.
Report today, one of the women's U.S. gymnasts test positive, and we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a one in, what, five chance? It's Simone Biles, right? Because there's five women. Or four? They only have four? I don't know. But like – and then you have like there's been some track athletes have tested, and it's not like, all right, what? Because when you test positive, you're not going to die. Like these are super healthy athletes. They're going to be fine. But what could die is their eligibility into the Olympic Games. And that's like would be ridiculous that them, you know, like that their 4-year long dream or 5-year long dream is just vanquished because of a freak test. And it's happening to vaccinated people. It's not even just like, oh, well, it's on you because you didn't get vaccinated. Like there are vaccinated people with multiple who are getting not allowed to compete in Olympics. And when Team USA travels over there, there's going to be a good chance someone from Team USA track and field is not going to be able to compete at the Olympics because of a test. And it's going to be devastating.
Here's why I'm optimistic. Do you think trials went better or worse than we would have thought a couple months ago?
Well, how often did they test them?
I'm not sure, but I think frequently enough. And there were a lot of, obviously, there's way more people involved. Like, not way more people, sorry. There wasn't a bubble in the same way there's going to be in the Olympic Games for the trials. You could go and stay anywhere. You could go and eat dinner anywhere. There wasn't this security perimeter around the Olympic Village. I thought it went smoother. If you asked me 4 or 5 months ago, and I remember talking to one coach before that, earlier in the spring, and the coach was very worried a lot of coaches were extremely worried about, you know, something happening to one of their athletes. Now, we had other drama in the Olympic trials, especially as it related to testing. So we had our fair share of it. But on the COVID side, I think it went about as good as you could have expected. There were some, was it what, day two or something? We got an alert about how there was three people who tested positive. One was an official, I believe. One was an athlete. We never found out who the athlete was, obviously for privacy reasons. And then another person, I think, was a support personnel member of the meet staff. I believe those were the three. But it was a lot less than I would have thought a couple months ago. So that's what I'm holding on to. Yeah, there'll probably be some people, but as a whole, I'm hoping it's not going to change the dynamic of the games.
Yeah, I mean, but like the question is, if it is someone that like is a medal contender, you're just like, this is stupid. Because yeah, like
right, but that didn't happen. That didn't happen.
It didn't happen. But also, the U.S. is a lot more laxed on the protocols than Tokyo is, and that's why we're seeing this. Like, I think
they were still
U.S. says like if you're vaccinated, you don't need to do certain. There's certain rules you don't need to follow and all that stuff.
Yeah,
and like there's no contact tracing if you're vaccinated. Like, whereas, you know, so I'm just saying, hey, I'm preparing for us to have a lot of this is getting ridiculous moments with the sport, with the games, if we start seeing people dropping like flies out of the games because of a positive test. I'm just saying, be prepared for it. Be prepared.
We got another question here in the chat. It's good to see the chat again. I missed the chat when I was gone. But it relates to another thing you have on the rundown. Liliana says, what do you guys think about the beds in the Olympic Village? LOL.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, there's been multiple reports about the beds. First, we had the report from Paul Chelimo. We had a long thread, which I just kind of want to read through. You talk about the beds being installed, made out of cardboard to avoid intimacy among athletes. So they only can withstand a single person weight and avoid any non-sleeping situations on the bed. And he says, I see no problem for distance runners. Even four of us can do, because he's – and if you keep scrolling, let's go through – he talks about the different things. Travis, you want to scroll?
He's got a lot of jokes. He's got a lot of jokes. Yeah. This is good.
He's like, I can't fly Polaris, then sleep on a carton box. Now economy is very perfecto. Those who pee on the bed are at risk of here. Once the carton box is wet, the bed falls over, especially it will suck if it's a night before the finals. At this point, I will have to start practicing how to sleep on the floor, because if my bed collapses and I have no training on sleeping on the floor, I'm done. And then he shows a picture before bed, after, just a pile of boxes, a picture of the gift from Step Brothers. You know, a lot of people are just, it's like, you know, it's the meme of the trial of the Olympic Games. You were moving from an era of Breaking Bad to Breaking Bed. I can't imagine getting boxed in at the 5K finals and also getting boxed at the Village. Double trouble. Gotta love it. Who did this to me? This is him.
Oh yeah, pull this up.
That was funny. The picture of the Tokyo bed tripping him up. That was Woody Kincaid as the Tokyo bed. So
funny.
I mean, we see this at every Olympic Games. We saw the fake wolf at the Sochi Olympics, you know. But then there's this guy who tested the bed and he says it's fake news. Look, watch this. This is him jumping on the bed. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Jumping. Look at that. So if you're going to have to...
Is he saying it's not cardboard? Or well, is the cardboard just that strong?
It's strong cardboard.
That's impressive.
Yeah. I think, one, it's cardboard because it's cheaper to manufacture and carry around and put... You find 10,000 beds. It's a lot of work. But here's the thing. People are going to find a way to procreate. That's how we've survived for thousands and millions of years. We found ways to procreate. They're not going to get a little Tokyo beds get in the way of them, you know, entertaining each other. So I ain't worried. This is a non-issue for me. They will figure out ways. It's just cardboard.
I'm just impressed that cardboard could do this. I guess I did not know the full path. I thought Velcro was the greatest invention ever, but it might be cardboard. Like, it's incredible. That, like, if this guy's jumping, he's got a good mattress on there, I'm assuming, that's absorbing a lot of the shock. But you never would have told me before this that cardboard had this capability. It's pretty impressive. I just do like that Chelimo is using it as a platform to just, you know, all of his jokes. Like, they're great. It's just like when the during the lockdown, remember he put the soap in the bathtub and started running? He's good at taking like really big, like, in, you know, stories, real big concepts, and going viral off them. I commend him.
The thing about the Olympics is there's always great stories about the Olympic Village experience, right? There's obviously the, like, it's a party because all the most attractive and fittest athletes are all in one place for 2 weeks. So they need to have these box beds to stop them from procreating. But I honestly think there is a procreating. That's what I like to say. Sex, the same thing. I feel like there's like a movie plot potential based around athletes in Olympic Village, like a murder mystery where there's a murder that happens in Olympic Village and all the athletes are in there and there's like just trying to figure out who did it, who done it. I feel like the setting a landscape of athletes in Olympic Village is perfect for a great thriller or movie, or like a Mayor of Easttown, but it's like the you know, mayor of Olympic Village, something like that. I think it'll be great.
How many Olympiads are we away from there being a reality show that goes on in the village?
Exactly. I mean, we might be a few. We might, maybe 2028, maybe the LA ones. That would make sense. LA, you know, real Olympians of LA instead of Real Housewives, right? Be great.
Well, I just think the Olympics is going to try harder and harder to capture the youth demographic, and what better way to do that than to have just a reality show ongoing at the same time? Because by that point, TikTok will actually be in the Olympics, so it'll be added to the Olympic Games, TikToking. So then you'll just have a bunch of influencers there anyway, and it'll make
be judged sense. Like gymnastics is judged, like perfect form for the dances and stuff. And
well, it's not even the dances. It's just the like doing of like, it's just literally TikTok, like using TikTok.
Okay.
Yeah.
You sound like an old man when you say that.
The TikTok. What other stories did you want to get to here? Jalen Slade was pro.
Okay. Jalen Slade. Dude, what's with every high school kid, sprinter, who's being like, I'm going to Adidas. Like, University of Adidas is really good at recruiting because they find a way to get every high school kid to join them instead of joining the NCAA. But yeah, he's 17. He's been running well. He didn't really have that great of a Olympic trials. He had that weird like fall that in the 100. But he's quick, man. And Adidas has been doing pretty good with signing the right sprinters at a young age. Better than Nike, I would say. I mean, obviously Noah Lyles, see Ariam Knighton. They've done a good job. And, you know, even back to some distance running, like they got Ajay Wilson young. Drew Hunter has yet to really come together, but Hobbs Kessel you have hope for. Adidas is getting the right people at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get your driver's license at 16. You get your Adidas contract at 17, and then you vote at 18. That's just the progression of how it works. Yeah, they've had some people who haven't panned out, and it's people we probably haven't even talked about because they were big on the high school scene, but I don't think they were prominent enough to where professional track people who follow more on the college and pro side would have paid attention to it. But someone like Slade already on that pro schedule makes sense for him to do it. Knighton already. Did that pay off already?
Oh yeah.
It feels like it already did. Now he's got to go on and do big things for another couple of years now, but he seems firmly on a trajectory because there's people that get signed real young and then you have to kind of squint a little bit and turn your eyes and be like, yeah, that'll pan out one day. Ariam Knighton got the contract and then just said, all right, I'm going to start running like a pro. Now. Like, I'm not going to wait. I'm going to take Lyles' high school record. I'm going to go toe-to-toe with Noah Lyles, and I'm going to make an Olympic team.
He wasn't 1 year away from being 1 year away. He was just already away. He was there.
Well, and then it makes sense because I the counter's always like, well, are they going to be good for 5 or 10 years? It's like, well, for Adidas, it's you want him when they're good, and he's good now. So that's all that matters. And he'll get more attention because he's young and good. So whether or not he makes 4 Olympic teams or this ends up being his only Olympic team, it feels like a good investment right now just because you got him when he was running this fast. And he's not far off of being a medal contender for sure
already. Do you think Jalen could have – look at his mile split profile. Look at that, 43.79. I was like, that's a quick 400 time. And I was like, oh, wait, that was his 100-meter time.
Yeah.
Because he fell. But do you think – I mean, we had the name, image, likeness thing go down. Like, why wouldn't Jalen be like, hey, could I just go to an Adidas school and get an Adidas contract? I don't know. Like,
do you think we were overrating the impact maybe, that the NIL was going to have?
Well, maybe for certain athletes it is, right? Maybe for certain athletes, the lure of NIL isn't enough for them to not go to professional. I think it depends on the way, the circumstance of every athlete in their at the time of signing the contract. But
yeah,
you now have Jalen Slade going pro when he knows he could have gotten sponsorship deals as a college kid. You have someone like Hobbs Kessler who's like goes pro and is okay with not, when I asked Hobbs Kessler, hey, what are your thoughts about not being able to run an NIU? He's like, hey, I'm content. I'm happy with doing the Adidas thing. And Jalen Slade, Travis mentioned that he has a shit ton of following on social media. So that's probably a factor. So, hey, as long as the kids find a way to get their money, I'm cool with it. Whether it's them getting money while in college or getting money while not in college, as long as the money is, they're getting it and they're having fun with it and then work their way up to be able to take all their career earnings and live large on cardboard beds in the Olympic Village. That's all that matters.
Well, first of all, that picture, you could do a great how it started, how's it going with them, the Adidas announcement afterwards. I think it would be cool. I think there's money for small sponsorships and NIL type stuff, and then there's sponsorship money. And I think that sponsorship money comes with obviously more zeros behind it and also peace of mind that it's not going to go away. It's not like a time, you know, it's not a here's this thing for 3 months. We want you to be an influencer. Yeah, you got Travis's quote wrong. You bring up Travis's name.
I misspoke. He doesn't have a big following.
Which he's in high school.
That makes more
so
sense now. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. But I also think there's something to be said for having the peace of mind of knowing, like, if you can sign a multiple Olympic cycle contract, I don't know how long this contract is, but just say hypothetically it did go through the next couple Olympiads, then that's a hard thing to pass up. And then he can get those sponsorship deals on top of that as well, obviously, to augment it. But I think he's probably got a pretty good setup as is right now. What we were saying the appeal was before was for to stay in college was you had the training group around you, you had the coaching staff, you had the training facilities, and if you wanted to get a degree, you had all that at your fingertips. But if you already have the coaching, you already have the facilities, you already have the training partners, and then you can sign for six figures, you sign for six figures. Both of those paths make sense to me.
Yeah, every time we talk about like, oh, is it the wrong thing to go pro? We never know. We don't know the situation. And it's always the right thing because the right thing is to get money. So the lure of like a college education, like whatever. Like I'm not using my college education right now. Like the college education, like mystique of like, how are you going to survive in the real world? It's like, whatever. No one cares where I went to school now. I'm doing a podcast. My doing AP calculus didn't lead to me being able to talk about track. So not that I'm against school altogether, but let's be honest. School's a little overhyped. It's just a little overhyped in reality. You don't need school in order to
I'm glad make, I came back for this.
Make help. Life in the real world.
You know, no, here's the here's the better point. You can go to school and be a pro athlete. There's no rule that says you're not allowed to go to school if you're a professional athlete. You could do both.
That's true.
That's my point. Do the Allison Felix route. You know, get the company to pay for your school. Boom, boom, and then you win. Yeah, you want them to be compensated for their services. And if you're running at a pro level already, why not be paid?
And then the school pretends that you were one of their athletes, like USC does. It's like, Allison Felix did not run for you, USC. Stop pretending she's one of you. She's not. Is that allowed? Do you think it's cool for USC to like pretend that they like that Allison Felix is an alum of their school? I mean, it's technically of their school, but not their athletic department. Come on.
Hold on. Allison Felix, USC. I want to see what her major was in.
Was it shoe design?
No. It was in, let's see. Oh man, I can't find it. I'm saying here we go. A bachelor's in education. So the education department at USC can claim her. The athletic department cannot. So the bachelor's of ed can be like, we produced one Olympian. Like our education department has produced a 5-time Olympian. The athletic department cannot because they did not. That's the rule.
Correct. That is the rule.
Yeah.
So look at this. USC.
I don't want. Yeah. I mean, Michael Norman. Yes. I mean, I'm glad they included Michael Norman in it. I think they did that on purpose because otherwise it would have been like, what? No, that tweet should be from at USC education department.
Yeah.
Where Allison Felix got her degree from. That's where it should
Travis,
be.
Click on that link. Click on that link. I want to see if Allison Felix has a profile and scroll down. Does she have like a URL profile for her name?
No.
Okay, they don't. All right, at least she doesn't have like a bio. Because you can click on Anna Cockrell. You can click on, I guess Norman doesn't have one either. So maybe they deleted it. But see, USC 2008 qualified. Come on. What are we doing here?
Travis, do one more Google. Type in USC School of Education and just see if it's like the banner image. Like Allison Felix, class of 2004, qualifies for the Olympics. I think that's as far as we can go on that. I mean, she went to the school, obviously, which is cool, but people get confused. People get confused. It's intentionally misleading here. All right, we got a few more minutes here. What else would you like to talk about, Gordon?
I want to talk a little bit about our one and only Shikari Richardson. She got she has a potential sponsorship deal with a vape company, which I was actually thinking about. This would be perfect. They need to capitalize on this virality of the Shikari Richardson experience with running extremely well at the trials and getting banned for something stupid like marijuana. And there already is a company, cannabis vape company called Dr. Dabber, offered her $250,000 to test dab rings and vape pens as a resident doctor for the brand. Now, obviously, Richardson hasn't said anything yet, but she said the right things on to NBC Today show, and she said the right things, whatever that you need to say. But once that 30 days is up, you don't need to say the right things anymore. You can't be banned for for what you say. She needs to sign that, and she needs to, when she crosses the finish line at Prefontaine Classic, she is across the finish line holding up a fake joint, throw it on the ground and like step on it and be like, you can't like ban this, because everyone knows it's bullshit that she got banned. Yes, it's not bullshit that the rules that she broke a rule, because she did break a rule. And hey, even stupid rules have to be dealt with. I'm not saying like, I'm just upset about the rule, but she should take the $250,000 from the vape company. She would have to win like every Diamond League for 2 straight years to make that amount of money in one swipe of a pen, like, or vape pen, right? So she needs to take it. What do you think? Do you think she should take the money?
Listen, we're doing this segment right after you discourage people to get an education. So I feel like we need to do a disclaimer here, kids. Don't use these products, and don't listen to Gordon at all. From a PR perspective, no, she shouldn't do it. From a monetary perspective,
PR.
Well, PR, I mean, in terms of getting goodwill amongst the people, not getting your name out there. From a monetary perspective, I think what you said is interesting to note about how many diamond leagues you'd need to win. And I don't know her financial situation, so I can't weigh in on that. I was surprised. I got to be honest. When you and Lincoln tackled this topic, I thought Lincoln would have been a lot more vehement on your side and on this. He kind of soft pedaled it a bit, but that's okay. No, I don't think she's going to do this. I don't think there's any chance that
she should though
does this.
Wait, when you say PR, you need to get people on her good side. Who's on her bad side right now? Like 12 people. Like,
well,
who's
no,
on her bad side?
I know I think people, well, there's rules are rules, people. And then there's also, she won people over with the Today Show thing. Like that was effective. And the reason she won people over is because people wanted to hear an apology. Now, you and I talked about this when I went on my paternity leave. But we talked about how she didn't need to do that and that the whole thing was a bit ridiculous. But I think that actually won people over. So I'm just excited to see her race again.
I think
100% did. I think it 100% did. I think people wanted to see her apologize because of the way our celebrity sort of athletic nexus is, and we see the fall from grace, and then they want to see people show up at the morning show and say that they did something wrong to Savannah Guthrie. Like, I think people actually, oh, she learned from her mistake. She's moving on. Again, that was not my opinion. I said it was strange. I don't think you need to necessarily go down that route. At all, if she fought back and said it was not a good, the rule should be changed, and the rule should be changed immediately. But I'm saying there were people who were more pro Sha'Carri after that than there were before. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know if we have the numbers on it, but I would disagree. But there's no way to prove whether or not, because there's no like Nielsen data on Sha'Carri pro con before. There's no some poll testing, some real clear politics poll averaging.
Okay, well, who? No. But who? Like, you think people went the other direction? You think people saw that and were less favorable about her?
No, I think people saw that and were like, oh yeah, she's doing that just to please the execs, the big ups, the doping people. She's playing the game for them. She's like pretending she's sorry. In the end, she knows it's bullshit. She's going to take the fine and do the public like, I'm sorry for the month. And then she'll be back to her normal self at Prefontaine a month later. And I think that she should be back to her normal self, and she should consistently for an entire year dunk on the people who banned her.
And I think you're too far in on this one. I think you're too far in to see what the quote unquote mainstream public is. Here, I'll quote a person, and I don't want to get into a political conversation, but I'll quote a person. President Joe Biden is who I'm going to quote here. This is coming from.
He didn't write this. See, when, come on.
On the 4th of July. No, he answered a question.
Okay.
On the 4th of July, quote, rules are rules. Everybody knows what the rules are going in. Whether they should remain that way, whether that should remain the rule is a different issue. Rules are rules. And then he said his final sentence, and I was really proud of the way she responded. And I take that to mean he's talking about the Today Show interview. That viewpoint represents a much broader swath of the public than you or I think. You or I have way different viewpoints of this drug and about professional track and field and sports than most of the country. We do. And I'm not saying they're right and we're wrong. I'm just saying that that's the reality. More people think like that than think like us. We've just built this little echo chamber up, and we have all these track people watching. Some of whom disagree with us, but some of whom love Sha'Carri Richardson and are like, want to see her run against Shelly Ann Fraser-Pryce. So they're more likely to say, well, this is BS. But people watch that interview and they change their opinion of her, I think.
Okay, I will concede that there are people with that viewpoint. I just think that she doesn't need those people with that viewpoint on Team Sha'Carri for her to be a millionaire. And
I agree with that. I'm not.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I agree with that. She could be. You could be famous for a bunch of different reasons.
Yeah.
But I'm saying if there's a consistent, if they had a strategy here of how they want to deal with this, it would be inconsistent to that strategy to then take the endorsement and do the things that you're talking about. Again, not saying it's wrong. I'm saying it would be inconsistent. Wouldn't bother me at all, but I'm saying it'd be inconsistent.
It also would be fun, though. It would be fun.
Yeah, they got.
We want some fun.
I'm saying they got goodwill on their side because of it. Listen, we've seen her sound off on everything on Twitter, correct?
Yeah.
This whole season. And then with this, she's been pretty, I mean, I haven't looked at every single tweet, but she's been pretty straightforward. I feel like something would have surfaced if she said, you know, this rule, like if she criticized the rule, she criticized USADA. Look at what Christian Coleman said about the anti-doping authorities after his suspension. Contrast that to what Sha'Carri Richardson said. Completely different. Completely different approaches to it. Right? She's talking about the future. She's apologizing. She's saying she's going to be undefeated from 2022 to 2025, which is just a spectacular tweet. I think we need to have a whole episode soon ranking Sha'Carri's tweets at some point. But I think a lot of people are more on Sha'Carri now than they would have been if she was resistant to it. Again, don't say it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's the reality of it.
One last thing I want to get into before Travis leaves so you can put up this graphic is Alex Wilson, the Switzerland sprinter, ran in the middle of nowhere of Georgia at the Georgia Games, a 980, what do you run? 984 100 meter, and then a 1989 200 at like an all comers Georgia race. Now people are like, what's going on? If you look at the photo, it's kind of hilarious to see, the times. First place, 984. Second place, 1109. I would love to see the visual of that. Just crazy. He's in the men 30 and over, older. Like, it's like in a masters type race, and he's running a world-class time. It's kind of hysterical that this is where he's running his time. Yeah. What do you take of this? 984, that is good enough to win an Olympic Games. Obviously, you got to do it in the third round of all the pressure, but this is a huge breakout result and kind of out of nowhere. Extremely out of nowhere. Look at his previous results.
Yeah, look at that. He's look at like the tweet.
10-5, 10-5, 10-6, 10-4, 10-3, 10-3, 984. What is going on?
I don't think that this time is going to be ratified, would be my guess. Put the tweet back up there because it summarizes his best times as well. Oh, we might have lost. Oh, no, Travis is still here. In any event. The tweet says it also, there was a crazy 200 meter time there as well too. I mean, he ran 10:08 last year, or sorry, in 2019. It's not like he's not a good sprinter, and you have the plus 1.9 wind, but there's a section on times where it's like, what does it say on All Athletics? Faulty wind gauge, possibly wind assisted, like times basically that were listed at, like, there was nothing visibly wrong with them other than they were just, given all the available evidence, it didn't make sense, right? It's like, you know, it'd be like you running a 48 second 400 right now. No one would believe it. They could look at your old page and they could be like, well, kind of was near that before. But yeah, I don't like, go to the someone, I saw someone mention this on Twitter, like, has European Athletics tweeted about this? Because this would be a record. So it's listed there, but like, go to European Athletics' website. Like, how are they handling this news? Because if you're looking at 984, that's ahead of Vico's record. I think that would be a European record. Am I right? I'm looking at 984.
It's just like a weird thing. Like if a man runs an all-time mark in the middle of the woods, did it actually happen? That's what we're finding out right now. Yeah, European Athletics hasn't tweeted shown anything, but also they're dealing with their U20 champs. But
I don't know, man. I think you stop what you're doing if someone runs 984. I think you say, hold on, let's push pause on the
It's on the World Athletics page right now, right? He has the second fastest time in the world, according to World Athletics' results page. Like, I mean, we have to believe it, right? He did run a sub 20 in 2019 as well. So it's believable, kind of, right? I don't know.
Why would it not be believable?
I want it to be believable. Why not?
Oh, either
it's born in 1990. It's 31 years old.
Either a time issue or a wind issue. I'm watching video now. It's shot from behind. So they like basically run past at 40 meters or 50 meters, and then you just see them from behind. It would be a European record.
Yeah, congrats.
European record, baby.
Alex Wilson.
But I'm saying they would be, if they actually believed it, they would be promoting it is what I'm saying.
So then, if they don't believe it, are they going to at least address it? Are they going to be like, we don't believe you? Are they going to tweet out, nah,
they're
going to
be like, we're
lying
at the U20 championships. We didn't have any time. We're at the U20 championships.
But like, why aren't they believing it? Just because of the location? I think they're judging a book by its cover. They're like, oh, Georgia games, Marietta, Georgia. What's going on here? This ain't real.
No, they're looking, pull up his season bests. Pull up every other time this season. That's what they're
doing. He was sandbagging. He was trying to... get people not aware of who he was, and then show up at the last moment and be like, boom, I'm here.
Well, he's not. It's not like he's an unknown guy. You know, he's, like I said, he's run low 10s. Think of a U.S. guy who's run low 10s that you've heard of, and then all of a sudden they run 984. You'd be asking questions legitimately if that was the case. So
is he qualified for the Olympics?
Well, he's running the Masters meet in Marietta, Georgia, so I hope so. Do we have a PDF of the like entries yet? Has that been finalized?
So Alex Wilson, I'm going to see if he's. Oh yeah, so he's in the 100. He's entered in the 100.
There we go.
So I think I don't know, man. I want to believe it. Why not? I have no reason not to. I'm not going to not believe it just because second place ran 11 seconds and just because.
No, that's not why.
I mean, okay. So hear me out. Okay. So if Cole Hawker runs 3:29, will you believe that?
Where does he do it? In Marietta, Georgia?
Yeah, Marietta, Georgia.
I would be more likely to believe it because small fractions of time and wind don't factor into distance.
But like 6-7 second PB, where is that? He's been running 335s all the time, and now all of a sudden he's 329? We never saw that.
So basically Josette Norris, basically.
Yeah, Josette Norris from 406, 359. We have no problem believing that. But why can't we believe this?
Kevin Selby was there, that's why. So the guy whose name sounds almost like my name. Yeah, because it's small. You're dealing with instruments now at that point. Because you could go out there with in hand time Hawker and you wouldn't get it exact, but you'd get it pretty close. I guess the only issue would be the size of the track. But if you ran it on a track that had produced meets before, then you'd believe it. I would think most people would believe it. I believe Josette Norris's time, for the record. I don't know if that's a controversial opinion, but I believe that she ran 3:59.
Do you want to know why I believe it? Guess what the name of the timing company that did the timing for this meet?
Is it like Gordon Mack Timing or something?
They are called the Perfect Timing Group. You hear that? The Perfect Timing Group. So in their eyes, 984 was perfectly timed.
Mm-hmm. So I thought it was going to be like, trust the process timing or something like that. Do you want to give people the schedule for the rest of... Someone wants to know, where do you find the PDF of the entries?
So I wish I could add it. So if you just go to worldathletics.com and click on just go to worldathletics.com and the top, there's like an orange banner or like row where it says Tokyo Olympic Games, news, previews, athletes, timetable, stats. Just click on athletes and then you can, it's like a very like, it's not PDF, but like there's like a interactive like drop down, like click men, 100, and then you can see all the people who are entered in any event. So very easy. Wait.
So it's under athletes?
Yeah, click on athletes. Yeah, click on athletes. Okay. And then there's drop downs. So you can see who's entered in every event.
Oh, I see. Search for athlete. This is for the Olympics.
Yeah, this is for the Olympics. The key, though, is these entries, which people always forget every year, include alternates.
Yeah.
So when you see Craig Engels on the entry list, it does not mean he's going to the Olympics. It means he's the alternate for the Olympics. So the everyone always like, "Ooh, how did he make the team? Oh, how did he make the team? What's going on?"
Yeah.
They didn't make the team. It's only top three. It's just you're seeing alternates on the list. So yeah. USATF always enters their alternates. So they're on the – so they're eligible no matter what. And if Central breaks his leg tomorrow, Craig Engels could go.
It was wild. I was reading headlines last week, as late as last week. Novak Djokovic undecided of whether or not he wants to play in the Olympics. Don't we need to decide at a certain point? Like, when are these decisions going to be made? And you look at some of the basketball stuff that, like, those tournaments were deciding who was going as late as last week, I think. Like, Canada got knocked out in that tournament fairly recently. It's just interesting because you think, man, Olympic trials, it's up against the deadline. You got to get people entered, and there's all these athletes who are just thinking, man, maybe, do I do an Olympics or no? Do I Olympic this year or no Olympic? I got to decide. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And participating in the chat. I know someone said the moral of the story was all bad things about Gordon's views on school and drugs and stuff. So we'll do better on Wednesday. Working off the rust here, folks.
I'm excited, this is why, man.
You don't go from the trials to the Olympics without podcasting. You definitely can't do that. There's a minimum number of podcasts you can do between then and now. So getting the reps in. Remember, we're going to do live recap pods every single day. The Olympics. We're going to wake up early, so it's going to be great. Thanks to Travis for producing. Thanks to Colt for producing. I would say thanks to Gordon, but he damaged the youth today. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.